This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, how are you?
I'm doing just great today. You haven't started asking questions, though.
Well, let's start with the health care debate. It looks as though Harry Reid is optimistic that he can get together now 60 votes needed to get over the final procedural hurdle to pass a Senate health care reform bill. Essentially, it takes out, or so they say, the public option, gives the private insurers a larger stake in the game, allows people to buy into Medicare, make sure that private insurers spend almost all of their money on actually paying for medical bills. What do you make of this? Is this the deal that they needed to get this done?
Well, it's the deal they need to get it through the Senate at this point. And it looks as though Harry Reid will have those votes. There's 60 Democrats in the Senate, and he appears to have them all in line on this, notably Senator Joe Lieberman, who had said his objection was based on public option almost alone. Lieberman has also signaled he would not oppose a filibuster. There will be an up or down vote, and in all likelihood, the Reid watered down package will pass. I emphasize the word watered down because those on the left who always wanted a public option are increasingly voicing their dismay. We can hear it in speeches from people. We can hear it from editorials on the left, and we see it in polls. Fully 12% of those who oppose health care reform say so because the package that they're hearing about doesn't go far enough. That means that when it comes to a conference, to possible compromise, the House will, in all likelihood, have to tone down, water down the package it passed by two votes earlier this year. I'm not sure that many of those who work for it are going to go along with it, and we still haven't addressed the abortion measure. My guess is this battle is not over by a long shot.
John, why would the House Democrats need to water it down? Once you get to a conference, there is no filibuster for whatever comes out of there. They only need 51 or 50-plus Joe Biden to pass it. They can put whatever they want on the Senate floor, and they'll get it done, right?
On the Senate floor, they possibly could, but at the same time, the House knows that its bill was passed with a lot of arm twisting and a lot of hard work. And I'll give you an example. Many Democrats came over once the Stupak-Pitts measure was passed. That was the one that would deny any funds for the purpose of abortion. So many lawmakers warn that that is going to die in committee, and Nancy Pelosi well knows that she got the votes of many Democrats solely because Stupak-Pitts was included. When it comes back, does that mean she can count on them? I'm not necessarily sure.
John, one of the things we've heard in this debate, and we heard it a lot during the stimulus debate, especially among the three moderate Republicans that ended up voting for it in the Senate, because Arlen Specter was a Republican at the time, is that something has to be done. And while we don't like this bill necessarily from top to bottom, this is our chance to do something, so we're going to vote for this. In the end, won't those moderates who don't necessarily like the abortion language or perhaps some of the more liberal elements end up going with it just because they want to get something done?
Well, in the famous words of Ricky Ricardo, they're going to have some splaining to do if that's the case. This comes at a time when the debate has so turned off the American public and the compromising, the watering down, has so alienated the left that, again, Nancy Pelosi is going to have to count on a constituency within her own party with some losses, but not that many, because every single Republican except one in the House was opposed to it, and it appears as though every Republican senator is opposed to it. My guess is that the Democrats are walking a tightrope on this, and the argument that Bill Clinton made to senators, pass something, anything, is just not going to wash with a lot of people.
John, you mentioned that there could be some moderates and others who have some splaining to do if their constituents don't like their votes. Over the past couple of weeks, we've looked at some moderate Democrats who have decided not to run for re-election. First, it was Dennis Moore of Kansas. Last week, John Tanner of Tennessee. Now, Brian Baird of Washington. I'll ask the question I've been asking the last 3 weeks. Is this just a handful of folks who've decided they want to leave, or is this a tide of Democrats who realize they face some serious trouble at the ballot box if they do run for re-election?
why don't you come back and ask me that on January 31st, Greg, because December and January, the political pundits note, are the months when candidates who are going to leave usually say so. This gives their party time to groom a good horse in the stable who can run in their place and run some good candidates. And plus, along with the timing for filing deadlines and primaries, December and January are good times to go. And it's true, it seems as though for the past 3 weeks, one a week is the rate. First Dennis Moore, as you say, then John Tanner out in Tennessee, and now Brian Baird stepping down at the ripe young age of 53. I might add, in a very marginal district, third district. As to who will come next, I'm going to guess that there's going to be a number of them, and I will predict that the next one, the next proverbial shoe to drop, will be Leonard Boswell of Iowa. Stay tuned.
Interesting, since he's been a target of Republicans pretty much since the day he came to Washington. John, in addition to potential retirement announcements coming in January, we're also going to see the runoff for the Massachusetts Senate seat, once held by Ted Kennedy. This past Tuesday, we saw a pretty pathetic turnout in the primaries, but for the most part, we got winners that we thought we were going to get. It's a Democratic state, very deep blue, but you said around the time of the Kennedy passing that this might not be as much of a romp for the Democrats as you would originally think. What do you think now?
Well, we'll know January 8th. Something should be noted. Martha Coakley, the state attorney general, won with the support of Bill Clinton, as well as the powerful Emily's List, the pro-abortion group that raises money nationally for pro-abortion candidates. In the process, she beat some political heavyweights, Congressman Mike Capuano, as well as the owner of the Boston Celtics, whose name I just can't pronounce. And I can say that because I'm Italian as well. My guess would be that Democrats are not exactly united, and even if they are, a lot of them are not going to really make a big effort to turn out January 8th. It's cold in New England this time of year. In addition, for the first time in memory, Republicans have a very substantial candidate in State Senator Scott Brown, moderate to conservative. And also, we find some dissension even in New England over the Obama agenda. Do I say Brown can become the first Republican senator from the Bay State since 1978? No. Do I say that he'll do better than any recent challengers? There's a pretty good chance of it.
John, in other news this week, just today, in fact, President Obama in Oslo, Norway, picking up his Nobel Peace Prize, which was announced a number of weeks ago, of course, and surprised a lot of people because it was given more for what he might do rather than what he has done, as is usually the case. So what do you make of his speech? What do you make of the precedent this might set?
Well, I think that we are finding a case where only 26% of the American people, according to one poll, said that President Obama deserved the Nobel Prize. And as he addressed in accepting the award, this is a president who is presiding over an increase in troops, the largest since Lyndon Johnson in Vietnam, with his Afghanistan policy. Getting the Nobel Peace Prize seems a little controversial at this point, and I understand that. Now, quite frankly, a lot of Americans are also very proud their president is being recognized for this, and in his speech he seemed to address some of the controversy about his receiving the award. That said, I think that it'll be more interesting to see just where the president's Afghanistan policy goes and just what the results will be. Another past Nobel laureate who was controversial, Henry Kissinger, said, "We'll just have to wait and see where it goes." I agree with Kissinger.
John, we're out of time, unfortunately, but we'll talk to you next week, and we look forward to hearing your report from Monday night's White House Christmas party for the press. I assume after recent events, you are clear that you're on the list.
I am definitely on the list at this point, and I double-checked, got it in writing, and made sure they can spell G-I-Z-Z-I when I get there.
Good enough. We look forward to that. John, have a great time there, and we'll talk again next week.
Going in for some on-the-spot reporting from the White House, I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.